from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. He was a master of words of worlds that blended the real and the surreal, that told the story of Latin America with a nearly irresistible power and beauty. Literary giant Gabriel Garcia Marquez died last week in Mexico City at 87. Famed son of Colombia, whose stories had flowers that fell from the sky, tyrants that lived for centuries, and women whose looks could literally kill. Author of 100 Years of Solitude and Love in the Time of Cholera and much more, this hour On Point, remembering the power and magical realism of Gabriel Garcia Marquez. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Did he cast his spell on you? What made it so powerful? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear in this hour from Chilean-born novelist Isabel Allende, one of the many deeply influenced by Gabriel Garcia Marquez. Joining me now from New England Public Radio in Amherst, Massachusetts, is Ilan Stabans, author, biographer, essayist, professor in Latin American and Latino culture at Amherst College. His 2010 biography of Garcia Marquez is Gabriel Garcia Marquez, The Early Years. Ilan Stabans, welcome back to On Point. Wonderful to have you with us.
Wonderful to be back, Tom. Thank you.
And from Washington, Marcela Valdez joins us, Latin American literature and culture critic, founder of Criticas, the English language magazine devoted to Spanish language books. Her remembrance of Gabriel Garcia Marquez appeared last week in the Washington Post. Marcela Valdez, thank you very much for joining us as well today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Ilan, first to you, you've written about so many, as has Marcela, but about so many greats in Latin American literature, but here is the one, you know, Neruda compared him with Cervantes. William Kennedy said that 100 Years of Solitude was the first piece of literature since the Book of Genesis that should be required reading for the entire human race. What put Gabriel Garcia Marquez up on such a high plateau, Ilan?
I think that Gabo had something unique. He was able to hit it right on the spot, attract both critics and a broad readership all over the world by being humble, being direct, and doing something that he was taught at from a very early age, that is to become a reporter. Not only he eventually became a journalist, but not only reporting the world as he saw it, but reporting the imagination as he saw it. He spent his early childhood listening to stories that his grandmother told him, and those stories enchanted him. Later on, when he read The Arabian Nights, he discovered that many of them had a connection, were mirrored by the Persian classic, and that storytelling oral and storytelling written were two sides of the same coin. He devoted himself to doing this type of storytelling in a direct, straightforward way. And I think that ultimately he succeeded because he stressed the particular, and in doing so, he became universal. He is really of the stature of Dostoevsky or Tolstoy or Dante or Homer. I personally think 100 Years of Solitude is one of the two, if not the best, novel ever written in the Spanish language. I think, furthermore, then the Spanish language was created in order for this book to be written.
there's a claim. We're going to hear from 100 Years of Solitude and Love in the Time of Cholera and more in this hour. Marcela Valdez, what did he mean to Latin America? That he was able to put down in words something so deep, he became a towering figure far beyond Colombia and all of South America, Latin America. What did he stand for?
I think that to understand the impact of Garcia Marquez, you also have to understand a bit of his political context. He became a great writer at a time when Latin Americans, writers, artists, were actually just beginning to think about a concept of Latin Americanism. Mm-hmm. It's easier for us, standing from the United States, to look down at Latin America and see it as sort of one connected entity. But when you're there, of course, there are many, many separate countries, and each of these countries has a separate history and a separate culture, although and different versions of the Spanish language. García Márquez was part of this boom generation where people began to think of the connections across Latin America. So I think that one of the main things that he represents culturally in Latin America is the ascendance of a consciousness of the region, its ties, its commonalities, its struggles. So I think that not just as an absolutely brilliant writer, I agree with Ilan that he's one of the greatest writers of the 20th century and definitely in the history of the Spanish language. But he also represents somebody who thought not just of his country, but of a whole region. I think that's part of the reason why he had such an immense following.
Ilan, do you have something you might read for us, maybe from the very beginning of 100 Years of Solitude, to begin to give us the privilege of bathing once more in this magical reality?
I do, Tom. Before I do so, let me tell you that there are very few first lines of novels that are incredibly famous, that are so famous that people sometimes feel compelled to read the rest of the book, and sometimes that first sentence is enough. And this is one of them. I'm going to read it first in Spanish and then in English so that your listeners get a taste or the flavor of it.
Sure.
Muchos años después, frente al pelotón de fusilamiento, el coronel Aureliano Buendía había de recordar aquella tarde remota en que su padre lo llevó a conocer el hielo. Macondo era entonces una aldea de 20 casas de barro y caña brava construidas a la orilla de un río de aguas diáfanas que se precipitaban por un lecho de piedras pulidas, blancas y enormes como huevos prehistóricos. El mundo era tan reciente que muchas cosas carecían de nombre y para mencionarlas había que señalarlas con el dedo.
Gabriel García Márquez, the opening lines of 100 Years of Solitude, of course, in the language in which it, of course, was written, and in English, Ilan?
And in English by the astonishing translation of Gregory Rabassa was published in 1970, and which García Márquez himself described as better than the original.
That's generous.
Many years later, as he faced the firing squad, Colonel Aureliano Buendía was to remember that distant afternoon when his father took him to discover ice. At that time, Macondo was a village of 20 adobe houses built on the bank of a river of clear water that ran along a bed of polished stones, which were white and enormous like prehistoric eggs. The world was so recent that many things lacked names, and in order to indicate them, it was necessary to point.
And there we're off and running. And it will not be long in this passage, or just after the very beginning, in which one of his characters says, things, this is from 100 Years of Solitude, things have a life of their own. And it's simply a matter of waking up their souls. And he has José Arcadio Buendía, he describes, whose unbridled imagination always went beyond beyond the genius of nature and even beyond miracles and magic. Ilan, why the magic in his magical realism? What took him there and spun him and us into the real and the surreal at the same time?
I should say, Tom, that neither García Márquez nor any other member of the so-called boom generation, the one that he belonged to and Marcela was referring to, the collective aesthetic movement that came about in the 1960s and became world-renowned, none of them really was comfortable with the idea, with the concept of magical realism. It was a mistranslation that came about after one of them, somewhat of a precursor, Alejo Carpentier from Cuba, had gone to Haiti and had seen the mix of the primitive in the exotic, in the magical, in the religious, that he coined the term lo real maravilloso, difficult to translate into English, that which is real and marvelous, to compete with a vision that Europeans had at that time of the so-called third world, Latin America in particular, as awkward, as barbaric, that connected with surrealism. So this concept of lo real maravilloso was the one that Gabo and Vargas Llosa and Cortázar and others felt more comfortable with. But when asked, García Márquez said that he really wasn't a magic realist. He simply conveyed what he saw when he was little, that these huge rainstorms of butterflies were common in his town of Aracataca on the coast of Colombia, that the epidemics of insomnia he had witnessed when he was little, that the massacres of marchers that were killed by the government, again he had been present in, and that if this looked like excessive or extreme to foreigners, it was because of the foreigners' lack of imagination, not his.
Mariposas amarillas, Mauricio Babilonia. Mariposas amarillas que vuelan liberadas. Mariposas amarillas, Mauricio Babilonia. Mariposas amarillas que vuelan liberadas. Mariposas amarillas, Mauricio Babilonia. Mariposas amarillas que vuelan liberadas.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we are talking this hour about Latin America's literary giant, Gabriel García Márquez, and the spell of his magical realism. The Nobel Prize-winning novelist died Thursday at 87, famed for 100 Years of Solitude, Love in the Time of Cholera, and much, much more. The wonderful Ilan Stavins is with us this hour, author of Gabriel García Márquez, The Early Years, biography from 2010. From Amherst College. Marcela Valdez is with us, Latin American literature and culture critic, founder of Criticas, the English language magazine devoted to Spanish language books. Here's Gabriel García Márquez saying that his writing reflected daily life in Latin America. He's interpreted by the BBC.
No invento nada.
I invent nothing, he said. People always praise my imagination, but I believe I'm a terrible realist. Everything I invent was already there in reality.
A terrible realist, maybe, but he could take us into realms that seem so full of truth and marvelous fantasy at the same time. We want to hear it. Marcela, I think you've got a reading from The Autumn of the Patriarch, if I'm not mistaken, you might read for us.
I actually don't have that one.
Oh, all right. That's fine. Do you have something from that or Love in Time of Cholera? What do you have handy?
Perhaps as a point of contrast to what he became, I would read a little section from his first book, his first novel, The Leaf Storm. This might give a sense of how García Márquez developed as a writer. It's a very early appearance of this mythical town, Macondo.
Mm.
And it's in a very different style than the one that Ilan just read.
This is all the way back in 1955. Macondo, he wrote about again and again. We heard Oscar Chavez singing about it coming out of the in the last break there. What this had been a very much like his own hometown in some ways, but had been a former town of the banana plantation boom, the United Fruit Company, and then fallen on hard times.
Exactly.
What's the setting for Leaf Storm? Very early, 1955.
It's a very kind of neo-dark, neo-realistic novel, heavily influenced by the work of, say, Hemingway. It's, let me just read a little piece of it so that you can get a sense of the prose directly, since that's always so much more expressive. This is a mother who's speaking. She's listening to the sound of a coffin of a man who was widely hated in this town being hammered shut. Trying not to listen to the lacerating sound that makes my skin crawl, trying to prevent the child from noticing my confusion, I turn my face to the window, and in the next block, I see the melancholy and dusty almond trees with our house in the background. Shaken by the invisible breath of destruction, it too is on the eve of a silent and final collapse. All of Macondo has been like that ever since it was squeezed by the banana company. Ivy invades the houses, weeds grow in the alleys, walls crumble, and in the middle of the day, a person finds a lizard in her room. Everything has seemed destroyed since we stopped cultivating the rosemary and the nard, since the time an invisible hand cracked the Christmas dishes in the cupboard and put moss to fatten on the clothes that nobody wore anymore. When a door becomes loose, there isn't a solicitous hand ready to repair it. My father doesn't have the energy to move the way he did before the collapse that left him limping forever. And it goes on, but it what it's missing is the sense of the maravilloso that Ilan was talking about. There's all that realism, all that sense of collapse and doom, but it's done in a much drier style, and I think and it's the same translator, Gregory Rabassa. So it's not a change in the translation, but the language, line by line, is much more formal, much drier. It's a whole different way of conceiving the same place.
And yet, don't we hear it with the invisible hand that broke the crockery there? Just a little bit of that sense of magic moving already there.
Exactly. It shows how much technique was in this thing. It's not in his style of writing, in his invention of this kind of prose that was both realistic and joyous. He was a very direct writer, as Ilan says, but he was also a technical master.
I want to look at all that, but I very much want to give our listeners and lovers of Gabriel Garcia Marquez access to the airwaves here as well. Carlos is calling from West Palm Beach, Florida. Carlos, thank you very much for calling.
Hi.
Hi.
I took a trip to Panama. I haven't been there. I was born in Panama. I lived in the United States for about 15 years.
Yeah.
I got a chance to visit. This was around Christmas time, and I visited for about 3 weeks. And I took the book with me, 100 Years of Solitude.
Mm-hmm.
I got to read it as I went through this trip, visiting my family, visiting different parts of Panama and different areas, different more affluent areas and poor areas, and I stayed in different houses and stuff. And as I read the different chapters in the book and went through this trip, it had a profound effect on me. It was like the point you went to earlier, that there is a realism, but like he's describing things as they are in Latin America. He's not trying to make them magical. They just turn out that way. It's like, that's the way it is. Even though there's nothing supernatural going on, there is a sort of surreal quality to life down there. And it had a profound effect on me. I felt like I truly experienced my trip a lot more reading the book during it, as you saw that feeling reflected in the pages of the book.
Carlos, I'm so glad you share that, just exactly that. And I appreciate your call from Florida right there. Thank you very much for that. I mean, Ilan Stavins, he said himself that he didn't want to accept the kind of dry European interpretation of literature or life, that there was more to be told here. Carlos says there is a surreal quality to Latin American life itself. I wonder what you make of that. And then we really cannot say in the end that there's no surreality here, right? I mean, the young woman is folding the sheets and she walks straight up to heaven. Now, I suppose you could have a literal interpretation of that, but there's wonderment all over the place in this work.
I do think, Tom, that different cultures experience reality in different ways, that there's the texture of the of your house that when seen in a particular landscape, or the landscape of your childhood, has a flavor that is different if it takes place in Latin America, or if it's located in Africa, than if it is located in the United States. You know, I've always found it puzzling that when you enter a bookstore in this country, things are divided between fiction and nonfiction in a very dramatic way. You either find something that is factual or something that is imaginative. But in Latin America, bookstores are not divided that way. There is the section of literature, and that's it. And everything comes in it mixed up. And I think that that is an expression of what happens in Latin America in general. We don't tend to separate what can be quantifiable with what can be fantasized. And maybe in the end, you know, a chair is a chair, but when you can imagine a chair also to fly and you're convinced that it will fly, well, eventually it will. At one point, there's a line that I love of García Márquez. He said that it isn't that we lose our dreams and then we grow old, but that we actually grow old because we lose our dreams. And that those dreams are an intrinsic part of what we are, and that in Latin America, they are in your blood, they are in the bread, they are in the air you breathe. And reading 100 Years of Solitude in the United States without ever setting foot on Latin America is very different than traveling like Carlos did with his manual of life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through Latin America and seeing how different it would be experienced.
And yet, in some ways, it may be the closest brush, if one can't travel there, that one might have to the reality through his lens of it. Here's one listener who writes to us, Marquez rewired my brain. I read 100 Years of Solitude when I was in Mexico and immediately read it again because I couldn't bear to leave that world. What a gift his work has been to the world. Maria in Ashford, Connecticut. Maria, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
And I appreciate, and I want to thank you for giving us this program, and thank you to NPR to pass this program.
You're very welcome.
And I am lucky. I have with me, and I read 11 books of García Márquez. 100 Years of Solitude, of course, is one of his best. Then is El Amor en Tiempos de Cólera. But there is one that the first edition was in 2002, that the name is Vivir para Contarla. Mm-hmm. I will ask as a favor to your guest that maybe he can do the translation. At the beginning of the book, he wrote, La vida no es la que uno vivió, sino la que uno recuerda, y cómo la recuerda para contarla. That book is one of the beautiful that he wrote is about his infancy and the years he lived and how he started writing. I recommend that book.
Oh, Maria, I'm so glad for your call. Thank you so much. Marcela, Ilan, would you like to give a shot at the translating the opening line there?
Sure. It's roughly, life isn't what you lived, but what you remember and how you remember it so that you can tell it.
And it comes from the autobiography, Living to Tell the Tale. And it is an astonishing book, García Márquez telling his own story. And many of the episodes of 100 Years of Solitude, of Love in the Time of Cholera, of a Chronicle of a Death Foretold, are told there as the source, as the root, as the basis of what they would eventually become through the prism or the veil of the imagination. It's an astonishing book.
An opening line of such truth, ultimately. Ilan, remind us of his childhood, his parents' relationship that became so important in Love in the Time of Cholera, and most importantly, his relationship with his grandparents and their town there in Colombia.
He was the first of 10 children. His father worked for the telegraphic company and moved from one town to another. His mother often followed him. The marriage wasn't always happy. And because of this itinerant life, Gabo and some of his siblings, depending on the number, needed to stay with the grandmother. And in a house that, as time went by, kept on growing, kept on having additions. In that house, there were all sorts of women of his grandmother's and his mother's age who were the mentors, the figures that defined his education, and he thanked them throughout his life. He said that growing up with these women and with their fantasy was a way for him to be introduced to the beauty and the sensorial richness of the landscape in which he grew up. It is fitting to remember that Acataca is still a very poor place.
Colombia.
In Colombia, in the coast, it is. I visited maybe 5 or 6 years ago. Hardly anything has changed except for the fact that they have built an improvised museum to celebrate the life of García Márquez. And there's a train station that tries to mimic a train station where a yellow train arrives in 100 years of solitude. But there are all sorts of neighbors that remember him or remember hearing about him and will tell you a story that is so rich and enchanting as really make you feel that this is your own town. They tell it with the same type of magic, of enchantment. And you get a sense in their speech, you get a sense in the way they accommodate language, that García Márquez was exceptional because he knew how to use the very tools that were common to everybody in that landscape. That is the language of the place. He simply knew how to transpose it from the oral to the written, to use the pen, and to bring it to the rest of us. It is that what a good writer ultimately does.
His grandfather there, the colonel, so important in his early years. His grandmother with a wonderful name, Doña Tranquilina Iguarán Cotes. And that passage you described there in 100 Years of Solitude, the yellow train arriving. Here's a passage, that passage read by actor Hector Elizondo.
All the inhabitants ran out into the street and saw Aureliano Triste waving from a locomotive. And in a trance, they saw the flower-bedecked train which was arriving for the first time 8 months late. The innocent yellow train that was to bring so many ambiguities and certainties, so many pleasant and unpleasant moments, so many changes, calamities, and feelings of nostalgia to Macondo.
And we're back in the streets of Macondo in the hands of Gabriel García Márquez. Dan in Cleveland, Ohio. Dan, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Oh. I wanted to comment on Life in the Time of Cholera.
Love, yeah.
When I read it, it so spoke to me on a personal level. Just very briefly, biographically, young love, even though I'm 67 years old, I've had other loves in my life. The love in that for that one individual is still in my heart, still pure. I did go through a period sort of like the main character of degradation, if you will. And I like the dichotomy of the purity of this individual's love vis-a-vis, again, if you will, the type of life that he was living on the outside.
And yeah, the old couple getting back together again after that early love and so many years later. So vivid, so utterly irresistible, Dan.
Absolutely. It if you will, it has given me a glimmer of hope that perhaps one day my story will have a similar ending.
So. We should all be so lucky. Dan in Cleveland, I appreciate your call. They're channeling Gabriel García Márquez right into his own love life. If you've read Love in the Time of Cholera or 100 Years of Solitude, it is so easy to bring it in. Here's Ay Amores. This is Shakira, a sad romantic song. There Are Loves, recorded for the film version of Love in the Time of Cholera, based on a book of the same name. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Mi amor es, que parece que se acabará y florece. Y en las noches del otoño reverdece. Tal como el amor que siento yo por ti. Yo por ti. Por ti. El amor que siento yo por ti.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about Latin America's literary giant, Gabriel García Márquez, and the spell of his work, his magical realism. The Nobel Prize-winning novelist died Thursday at 87, famed for 100 Years of Solitude, Love in the Time of Cholera, and much more. The wonderful Ilan Stavans is with us, biographer of Gabriel García Márquez, The Early Years, his book out in 2010. Marcela Valdez is with us as well, founder of Criticas, the English language magazine devoted to Spanish language books. She's just returned from visiting her family in Chile, back in the U.S. right now. We heard about the grandmother and grandfather in Akataka that helped raise him on the Colombian coast there. The grandfather, full of stories of history and the time at war. The grandmother, full of stories of premonition and omens, portents. Here was Gabriel Garcia Marquez in 1984 in an interview with NPR.
There was a real dichotomy in me because, on one hand, during the day, there was the world of my grandfather, a world of stark reality, of civil wars he told me about since he had been a colonel in the last civil war. And then, on the other hand, there was the world of my grandmother, which was full of fantasy, completely outside of reality.
And here, Gabriel Garcia Marquez from his acceptance speech for the Nobel Prize in Literature, 1982. He spoke about the creativity of writers like himself.
We, the inventors of tales, will believe anything, feel entitled to believe that it is not yet too late to engage in the creation of a new and sweeping utopia of life.
There, in 1982, with the Nobel Prize, with us right now from San Francisco, internationally best-selling Chilean novelist Isabel Allende. Her latest work is Ripper. She's written books in the magical realist tradition, including City of the Beast, The House of Spirits, author of 19 books, and no small number of times our guest here at On Point. Isabel Allende, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for being
with
us.
Hi, how are you, Tom? Thanks for having me.
Well, what is Gabriel Garcia Marquez's imprint on you, Isabel Allende?
I don't know, he's the grandfather of everything. I don't think I would be a writer without him, opening, paving the way, opening all the doors to magic, fantasy, imagination, reality, war, violence, death, love, everything. His influence in Latin American, to all Latin American writers, is huge. And I think I owe him everything.
Chile is a long way from Colombia, and yet he seems to write to universal Latin American themes. Why? How?
Maybe they are just universal, not necessarily Latin American. I grew up in the house of my grandparents with a grandfather like his grandfather and a magical grandmother like his grandmother. So when I read A Hundred Years of Solitude, I didn't know anything about the author. This was 40 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt that he was talking about my family, about me, about my childhood, my country, everything, my dream world.
Did you and other writers from Latin America, or did you feel that he showed you the way or somehow gave you permission to stretch the bounds of dry reality? Did he make that acceptable? Did he inspire you to work with some of those same very fantastical parameters?
Yes, he did. But in a way, he was portraying something that I think many of us felt. It wasn't an invention of García Márquez. He found the language to express it, but it was there.
Ilan Stavins, here's one of many writers influenced by this man.
Well, he's the pillar of the boom of Latin American literature.
Yeah.
The boom really started before with La Ciudad y los Perros, the City and the Dogs, I think it's called in English, by Mario Vargas Llosa in 1963. But if we think of the boom of Latin American literature, it's García Márquez in the center, and the rest is a choir of very different and harmonic voices, but he is the master.
Ilan, here Isabel Allende brings a famous political name as well as her own famous work into our conversation. Gabriel García Márquez, you said in Latin American bookstores, fiction and nonfiction are mixed up together, literature and politics. That was true in his life as well, Ilan.
It was. And even though we are celebrating him, as we should, for being the canonical, the totemic figure that opened up the waters, the Moses, so to speak, he was also, in some ways, a kind of dinosaur when it came to politics. He was a part of a generation that was infatuated by the Cuban Revolution of 58 and 59.
And by Fidel Castro in particular.
In particular, and whereas Octavio Paz and Vargas Llosa and Carlos Fuentes, all of them to a different degree, but moved away from Havana and from Castro, Gabriel García Márquez stayed behind, was a very loyal friend of the Cuban regime. And for many people in Latin America, there's a contradiction between the man who set free the imagination and the man who became stagnant in his politics was something not easy to reconcile.
Marcelo Valdez, what about that? He was kept out of the United States for decades until Bill Clinton invited him in to Martha's Vineyard, not far from where I am now, once he became president. It had been a long time because of that relationship with Cuba and Fidel Castro.
I don't think that you can separate the tenacity of certain of García Márquez's beliefs from the fact that he experienced profound poverty himself. I mean, he had years of his life where he was essentially homeless, sleeping in the newspaper offices, sleeping at friends' homes. He finally found a room for himself, a very cheap room in a brothel, and in typical fashion made sort of humor and lightness out of it, saying it was a fantastic place for a writer. I think he was paraphrasing William Faulkner because it was a quiet during the day and a party every night. But I mean, you scratch below that surface and you see somebody who's incredibly poor. He was rail thin. He was very shy when he was younger. So I think that he had a level of personal identification with what it means to be poor and unconnected in Latin America that can't be separated from his intensity of his beliefs in certain facets of communism and socialism.
Before that exclusion from the United States, Isabel Allende, I think I read he toured the U.S. with his family by Greyhound bus. He wanted to see the South in particular, the land of William Faulkner. What about his politics and his influences, Isabel? Faulkner and more.
Just add one thing to what Marcela said.
Please, please.
Carmen Balcells has been García Márquez's agent forever. Mm-hmm. And she's also my agent. And she tells me stories about him. And one of the stories she told me, one of the sayings of García Márquez was, "We rich writers are poor people with money." Mm-hmm. That is, you always keep mm-hmm. the mentality of being poor.
Poor people with money and the memory of that.
I think that's one of the reasons why he was so hugely popular, too.
Yeah, no doubt. Let me get a listener. Danny in Nashville. Thanks for calling, Danny. You're on the air.
Thank you. How are you, Tom?
I'm well.
Doing good. I just wanted to comment, one of my favorite works by Gabriel García Márquez is Chronicle of a Death Foretold. And he touches a lot of subjects that many authors don't unless they're from Latin America or they deal with magic realism, which is things that happen on a daily basis in Latin America. He touches on the racism. There's a character by the name of Nasir of Arab origin. And in Latin America, there's a lot of racism present that, you know, many people don't know about. Unless, you know, especially in America, unless you're reading about it.
Danny, do you have family roots in Latin America? Where?
Yes, Puerto Rico.
So you know and you found it in Gabriel García Márquez's work, that something true there.
Yes, there's a lot of truth. He speaks a lot about things that happen there. Magic realism is something that you see on a daily basis. There are many people who believe in different type of saints and spirits and things like that, that it's kind of a reality that you live in Latin America. Also issues within Nasir's family in his book, Chronicle of a Death Foretold, there's things like incest and racism and you know, an eye for an eye that happens in Latin America.
Danny, I appreciate your call. Elon Stabbins, I wonder about that. You know, he does write about very difficult issues, very difficult. But at the same time, there's something so enchanting, so extremely palatable about the wonderment of the way he puts it and the kind of fantastical presentation that I wonder, is there a risk in García Márquez of a sort of exoticism being thrown over Latin America, some sort of Western hemispheric equivalent of Orientalism?
You know, Tom, I have, in rereading 100 Years of Solitude, almost every year I teach a course on the book, a kind of Talmudic reading of the narrative. I have always been struck by how close it is to telenovelas, to soap operas. It's melodramatic. Yep. It's about the very basic human emotions: incest, loss of virginity, the connection between one class and the other, the loss of a father, the reclaiming of one's identity. I think that what makes him universal is the very fact that he deals with these very raw emotions. He doesn't hide them. He also doesn't pretend to be above them. He never looks down at his characters. He looks at them in the eye. There's a very famous story of when he was writing 100 Years of Solitude, and one night he had isolated himself in his study, and his wife Mercedes would bring him food to eat so that he wouldn't be interrupted. And one night he went up and started crying inconsolably. And she said, "What happened?" He said, "You know, the main character, Coronel Aureliano Buendía, just died. I never thought he would die. And he just died. And I am besides myself." And it gives you the impression, that anecdote, of how the characters controlled García Márquez and not the other way around, that he was in some ways the secretary of this larger work that probably existed beyond him, and he needed to maybe download it or simply convey it to us in a way that is a mirror to our own reality, the reality of the world in general, but the reality of Latin American in particular.
Nick in Weston, Massachusetts. Nick, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Oh, hi, Tom. I'm an American, a Bostonian from a Puritan, old Puritan family, and I have been going to Ecuador since 1996.
Yeah.
And part of the reason I've been doing that is because I was seduced by that very phenomenon, and I think it has to do with, it's a combination of a certain type of eccentricity and a certain type of conservatism and bohemianism all mixed together, that is an absolutely seductive mix.
You mean what we bluntly call magical realism?
Yeah, and the superstition, I think, comes with the older generation, which unfortunately is now dying out, and I wonder how much it's going to be carry on, because the influence of North American culture is overwhelming. I've seen it happen in Ecuador and since 1996, and it's really dramatic influence, and not for the better, I would say. When I first went there, life was slow. People took their time, and the older people were still around. A lot of them have died off.
Yeah, Nick, you give witness to it and remind us of the reality of it on the ground in Ecuador. Isabel Allende, does that beautiful multidimensionality that Gabriel García Márquez laid out for us, does it thrive? Does it remain? Does it go on in life, or does it risk somehow being homogenized?
I think that modern times have changed a lot, but if I may say, we tend to talk here in the United States about magic realism and superstition and beliefs, and I live in California, Tom.
Okay.
It's exactly the same thing. And we don't call it superstition here. We call it New Age, or we call it holistic whatever. But it is the same thing. People still go to astrologers and hang crystals around their necks. And we believe in dreams and prophecies and all kinds of stuff. And what is superstition for others is religion to us. So we have to be careful with those terms. I see in Chile, I go to Chile all the time. I have one foot in Chile and one foot here.
Yes.
And the life has changed, of course. But if you go to the rural areas, to Chiloé, to the south, up north in Atacama, people still live, maybe they live in modern times, but with the mentality of my grandfather.
It remains. Isabel Allende, it is an honor to have you with us today, and I'm so grateful to you. The latest book
from
Isabel is Ripper. Thank you so much for joining us, Isabel.
Thank you.
Marcela Valdez, last word goes to you here. What do you hope is remembered, is never let go from Gabriel Garcia Marquez?
Well, I very much agree with what Isabel Allende said. I think that that's part of the universality of Garcia Marquez's work. Why he had influence on writers in India, in all sorts of the third worlds, is because he got this clash between the technological and the rural that happens everywhere. It happens in the spiritual and the technological. It happens in California. It happens in Chile. But he did it with an incredible, brilliant technical style.
When you see the full dimensionality of life, and he let us see it, it may look like magical realism, or as he might put it, just full realism. One more song behind us here. This one's from Silvio Rodriguez, a Cuban artist. Story goes that he and Garcia Marquez once rode a plane together. The writer told him a story of an abandoned bride, recounted here in San Petersburgo. Marcela Valdez, I'm so grateful to you for being with us today. Thank you so much for joining us to talk about this great, great writer.
Thank you for having me.
And Ilan Stavins, always wonderful to have you. Thank you especially today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Gabriel Garcia Marquez, we remember you. Thanks for everything. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.